This is a Global Tellink prepaid call from...
Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with Kay Rhodes.
And Maysoon Wazwaz.
Can you hear me? Beep, beep, ba-da-doo-wah.
I can hear you.
So we had a little introduction to a little something we like to call the Congratulations Pine Tree t-shirt contest.
Ooh.
Last week. And a listener sent in a question saying, is that real?
It is real, listeners. Listeners, we want you to help us design our t-shirt.
You can get second place only because I already won, but still worth trying. So send in your t-shirts and we'll make a t-shirt of your design if it wins.
Yeah.
Deadline's coming up. So
deadline's
make it
coming up.
Make it good. Okay. Other thing right off the top we wanted to talk about was the Button Maker Brigade.
Yeah.
This is another thing we're trying out to try to get you to get on board and participate in something greater than yourself.
So here's the deal. We want to... greater than yourself. We want to get a little group of people together to go in on buying a button maker.
And a button press, like a industrial,
like a serious
quality, real, and you know, industry standard button press.
Yeah.
Small buttons, not those big ass.
Not like, we're not doing 3-inch buttons
here. TGI Fridays.
You can go to Zazzle.com if you need 3-inch TGI Fridays.
We're talking 1-inch, 1 1/4-inch.
Yeah.
The little ones you see the hipsters wear.
Or so that we all wear.
Chip in and we're going to share it and we're going to have like, you know, we'll
it'll be a little timeshare type situation.
Yeah, we'll do like a
one
monthly.
1 month here, 1 month there. It's got to be local.
We'll get
I'm
together
not
and
the
have
button maker anywhere.
No shipping.
You got to be in the Bay Area, people. So, I mean, I guess you guys all are, so.
There's people in England that listen.
I'm sorry to leave you out, Englanders, Britons, Britannians.
They can work. If you can't participate in this one, go start one in your local area. But point is,
I'm so excited.
Send a email to me or whoever, katerhodes@gmail.com, or call in 419-351-6606.
Or text or Twitter.
Uh-huh. Or you can use the bird-themed social network,
mm-hmm,
which
very
goes
good.
Unnamed. What if it was truly bird-themed? And your username had to be a bird.
That would be awesome.
And birds would fly across the screen sometimes. And
you'd be like, I'm Sparrow32.
Anyhow, our bird-themed name is @PineTreePodcast. So let us know you want to participate. We have 3 people on board so far, and these things run like upwards of $300. So we're trying to get the buy-in.
$300? They're way more than that.
Okay, we're talking... We're trying to get
they're
at least...
like in the thousand. I mean, I feel like a minimum is going to be $1,000 for one.
I find that to be an overestimate. But anyhow, the more people we get in, the less you have
did
to pay.
Did you do some research on it?
Sure did. The more buttons you can make. So just let us know you want to get on board. We're trying to shoot for, I'm going to say 10 people, 12 people, and everybody gets 1 month of the year.
Yeah, let's do 12. Button Maker Brigade, people. Come on, let's do it. It's going to be so much fun. We could do... What's it called again when you... Oh, we could do exquisite corpse buttons.
So tiny.
Wouldn't that be amazing? It is so weird. That'd be so weird and fucked up. And it would take a whole year to make.
This week we went to a few shows, but I think we really got to kick it off with the... I want to say one of the most bizarre art experiences I've had in my life.
It was... I felt scared at times.
Which was the International Art Museum of America. It's over around 6th and Market Street, on Market Street.
Yeah.
You've probably walked by it, especially if you've been to Root Division's new location.
Or even like camera work or luggage store. It's right there, guys.
Anyhow, point is, it's the International Art Museum of America. The name alone should tell you something's wrong. And you walk in and you're at like fucking the Huckleberry Finn diorama world with tree houses surrounded by moats, all fake, probably made of God knows what.
Yep.
Fiber core. So we had no idea what we were getting into. We just walked by. It looked like Disney World inside.
And at the same time, there's like, so there's this weird fake, you know, forested stream.
All fake.
Landscape.
All like
fake.
If you were going
But then
to...
there's also these like weird Greek columns like somewhere in the middle of it all, which is sort of like, what the fuck
entrance
is that about?
Then turns into kind of a Greek, like a proper oldie-timey art museum.
Yeah.
So we go in and there is a guard sitting at a desk.
Yep.
And
who was very friendly.
He gives you a map or a informational brochure.
Right, which Kate has.
And you're not allowed to take pictures, and you're not allowed to eat or drink anything.
He said no pictures upstairs.
And so you go immediately through a little entryway, and you're met with a sculpture in a large glass vitrine, and this is where you find out what's about to befall you. It's a sculpture made to look like coral, but I didn't even think it was a very convincing rendition.
No, but and I think in that first floor piece, I think they actually want you to think that it's real coral.
Oh yeah.
They don't talk about it being faux until upstairs, so it's really weird. All the information was so misleading and non
even more interesting than the shitty sculpture.
Yeah.
Was the plaque. Each piece in the museum has a plaque that goes with it. This is where, I feel like this is when we knew this was going to be weird, was reading the plaque. It basically says all this extremely grandiose praise of this sculpture, how you can't believe it, that it's not real coral, even though you totally can, and how great your living room would be if it had this sculpture in it.
Yeah, as a centerpiece.
And
it's
that
so
it
wild.
Just brings harmony and light and whatever, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's like right when you very first come in. And then you go up a set of stairs.
Right.
And you're
met with a bust of
this artist who is the artist that is responsible supposedly for about 90% of the work in this museum.
Yeah.
I'm doing quotation fingers. So you get to this bust and it turns out this is HH, I think stands for His Holiness.
Oh yeah.
Dorje Chang Buddha III.
I think it's Dorje.
I think it's, I watched some videos where people say it, and I think
me too, but I thought they said Dorje.
Oh, okay.
But
anyhow, it's Dorje.
I may watch that video you
said. Known hereafter as Buddha III. Mm-hmm. Let's just call him that.
Buddha.
His Holiness.
That sculpture was, the bust of him was also very weird looking.
It really looked like a Disney,
It looked
Disney
like a cartoon
world.
Character almost. Yeah, it had like long hair, shoulder length hair, and very sort of like,
so the plaque plasticky. Accompanying this bust speaks of him as being recognized as achieving the highest status, but has received more recognition certifications and demonstrated more accomplishments than anyone else in the past few thousand years. Okay.
That is outrageous.
It's
so funny.
The book about him, which I think they sell there, alone displays accomplishments in 30 large categories. This museum similarly exhibits only a portion of Buddha III's artistic attainments, which in turn constitutes only a portion of his countless accomplishments. I mean, it goes on and on like that.
Every plaque is basically like that.
I mean, it blew my mind, but so 90% of this museum is just work by this one guy, supposedly. But it's a lot of paintings. But then when you look closely, the paintings are not paintings.
They're supposed to be watercolor paintings.
Most of them, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're actual digital prints.
They're digital prints. And they're like, this is from 1853. And we're like, this is from 2 years ago.
Yeah, this is from a Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah.
Large-scale printer.
It's totally wild. But then, I mean, the thing that totally got me was that there were other visitors at the museum
taking
it
all seriously
in. I literally heard someone say, wow, this is amazing coral, and then
saying that it was real when it is so obviously
like
shitty lumpy ceramic. It's bullshit.
It's really like heavily glazed. I mean, so glossy over the top. I'm like, coral doesn't fucking look like that
at all.
It's so funny. It was just so weird. And then so this woman was like, oh, this is real coral. And then a few moments later, the person she was with actually read the fucking plaque and was like, oh, no, this says it's faux.
I mean, the whole
like,
thing is on like this rumpled blue velvet that's made to simulate water.
Yeah. Which was fun.
The artifice of this place was unbelievable.
It was wild.
I mean, the floor of the entire place is this like fake marble
linoleum
tiling.
Yeah.
Which you get to one room and it's basically claiming that this tile is also painted by this guy.
Right.
Buddha
and you're
the
like,
third.
This is not
this
paint.
This is one of the 16, was it 16?
Different tiles.
Different painting styles that he invented.
Oh, I wonder if they printed them on a 3D printer, those tiles.
I doubt that. Oh my God. There's just so much. I mean, the museum goes on forever.
Can we talk about the holograms?
Yeah, so it kind of goes in kind of a chronological order of the work, going from the work he made that was somehow innovative in a way I didn't quite
those
understand,
paintings,
but that
the
was
quote
like
unquote paintings
was
first.
Like reminiscent of like, you know, the Japanese ink wash paintings.
Yeah.
But his was like way more amazing for whatever reason.
Because it was digital. It was actually printed on a copier.
Well, they're claiming that he has this like peace and enlightenment where he can just do this master stroke without any thought at all. And you can tell the mastery.
Okay.
And then you go on and on.
Especially if you don't look too closely.
Right. Things start to get more and more contemporary, where kind of towards the end of this, you are presented with what I'm pretty sure was that weird spray foam.
Oh, yeah.
Sculptures made out of spray foam that look kind of like stalactites or whatever, yeah. Like cave kind
of. But didn't they claim it was like wood and
I have no other idea.
I mean, the materials that they claimed were like, definitely not.
No, it's foam. And then it would be like a foam border housing a hologram.
It's so crazy.
Of a cave inside of this. And that, I thought, you could have seen that at MoMA. That looked contemporary as fuck to me.
But you could not have seen that at MoMA.
I think
crap.
I think you totally could have. Are you serious? Last time I was at MoMA was fucking Isa Gigs in socks. Or whatever, and it was just like that, like spray foam, fucking, you know, all like plastic, whatever.
I don't know.
I'm telling you, in the right framing, that shit could have been anywhere.
The holograms weren't even functioning properly. I mean, they didn't. You couldn't even tell what. I don't know. It wasn't very.
My favorite of the hologram work was a nice giant foam bullshit thing with inside a kind of tropical scene with two flamingos. And the title of the piece was like Two Phoenixes. Flamingos.
Two Phoenixes at the water or on the river. And I got a good kick out of that one.
I want to share with you there was one sculpture when you first come in that looks like pretty badly carved marble. This was in the very, very beginning. And it's just a big thing of marble with like weird, you know. I don't know if you've ever been in like a high school sculpture class, but if there's any kind of carving happening, there's going to be a lot of swirls and a lot of organic shapes. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it looked like. But then it turns out it's not marble at all. It's like plaster or something and then painted to look like marble. And then with about 8 million, I don't know what kind of shellac on top to make it real shiny. But anyhow, the piece was called Universe in Motion. And let me give you a little tidbit here. This is a type of inner force that spirals from top to bottom and from left to right. This dynamic force of nature seems to enable us to see the center of the universe. This is the melody of life. That is why another name for this artwork is melody. What do we want to say here after all? Actually, only one word. Art.
What? That's what it said?
Uh-huh.
I mean, guys, it was so weird. And it was weird, and there was a point where I actually became a little bit, you know, because it kind of wound you through the museum in a way that I was sort of like, are we going to get kidnapped in here? I got a little nervous.
Well, yeah, by the end of it, I mean, there's one room called the treasure room that is locked by being kind of barred with literal bars, like three bars that go across and have like padlocks.
Huge padlocks.
On either end. That got to be scary. By the end of it, I really did feel like, especially because there was a father and daughter where the dad is trying to explain this work to the kid, like it's so legit.
Yeah.
And I just started to think, like, are they real? Like, is this all
fake? I know. Kate at one point turned to me and she's like, do you think the visitors are real or do you think they're like plants? You know, like, are they thrown in there to try to make it seem convincing for people who are wandering in?
Right.
And that made me freaked out. I was like, let's get the fuck out of here.
And unfortunately, that was right towards the end. But I can't tell you. I mean, it was free. There was no admission charge. So if you want to go to this place and Please let us know, because I would love to hear what anybody else has to say about it. Nobody else seemed as freaked out as we were. Everybody was just having a chill Sunday at the museum, or Saturday.
Yeah. I'm like, God damn you people, don't go. At one point, I looked at Kate, I'm like, the SF Mumma needs to open up again, quick. Like, people are going into this museum thinking it's like the museum of San Francisco to go to. It's so stressful. I'm like, oh God.
I don't know, man. This is like nothing I've ever seen before.
I've never seen anything like this either. Oh, and then there was those other rooms with like the European paintings.
That's the thing. So there's a little bit of work by other people to give it kind of context. And when I looked up I tried to get more information about this place on the internet. And I guess they opened for 5 months. And our research assistant, Katie Kondo, went during that time. And they got some criticism because it's called the International Art Museum of America. But it really is only showing one artist.
This one guy, yeah.
So I don't... Anyhow, so I think that's kind of why they put in some work by other people.
Yeah.
Because it didn't really seem clear how that was tied to this Buddha the Third dude.
Yeah.
And then when Katie went with us to the museum, she actually chit-chatted with...
the director.
Lorraine Huang. Katie asked her about these other European paintings and... the director said that they have to be like $200,000 per square foot.
Yeah.
And it was all about money. And some of the
And I think there was something about like that they have to it had to be collected in a certain number of museums around the world or something. Right. Like there had to be some like it had to be valuable and worth yeah, certain to be status able to worthwhile be, to be in the museum.
To be shown.
Which is a really weird way to value. It's like such a weird way.
Well, and then
also... it's so fucked up. The whole thing is so confounding.
Some of the other work that they attribute to other artists, but I'm not sure if it's true. I don't know if any of this shit that they're saying is any of it's true. Like, I don't know if any of that work is by this guy. I don't know anything. Like, this guy is very mysterious. I looked him up. Yeah. He seems like a little mystery.
Were there any images of him?
There were. There was one photograph of him, but I couldn't find yet.
Was there like any live video of him?
I couldn't find yet any video of him, but I found video of his devotees talking about him.
Yeah.
I actually saw my Dharma King master drastically change his appearance in a very short period of time. In less than an hour, I looked again, and my Buddha master had changed to a beautiful young man. I was shocked. Oh my God! How could this be? My master is a Buddha.
This Buddhist sect, whatever, this cult sect, believes that we're at the end of days, pretty much. Mm. That we're beyond when people are really able to learn dharmas anymore or whatever. Oh. Like the doctrine. Yeah. And so this guy can give you kind of like a whatever, like dharma for dummies. And like somehow get you like enlightened before things get so shitty that nobody can figure it out anymore. We're in a very dark time, according to these people.
Right.
Which I feel like that's always a good sign of a cult, is are we close to the end times?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is definitely part of a cult. And then you go out and there is a gift shop where they're selling gym art, linoleum tiling. I'm not sure if they're trying to represent this as like that guy made it, but he clearly didn't.
Yeah.
And it smells like linoleum or like vinyl.
It smells like it's like smells totally really plastic, disgusting.
So we go out there. The president comes out. She's like telling everybody in the gift shop that this one lady who's also in the gift shop gave like $200,000, which is like so embarrassing. That lady was an actual patron. You don't want that shit blasting off into everybody.
Yeah,
seems a little tacky. But man, that if that's the name of the game at this place, anyhow. So another thing that we found out from some of the paperwork or whatever, some of the publications that they have there is, I don't know what relationship they're saying they have with this organization called Success Development Incorporated, but it's on a lot of their brochures and stuff. And it turns out that's some kind of fucking motivational speaking kind of like, come take a class and we'll make, I mean, it's just like another cult, but like... that kind of like business cult where like come learn how to like maximize your efficiency and blah blah blah. And I think the craziest part of all that, maybe not the craziest, but one thing that it made me think about was like the language of business and the language of art are so married in their use of abstractions that just mean nothing, but like I don't know, just the stringing abstract vague language together to make it sound as good as possible. Like, maximize your efficiency, synergy. Like, we're going to make you the most excellent, courageous, blah, blah, blah. And that's what that is. And that was also another hard nut to crack. Like, the only things I could find about it were their own website. So,
oh, they have it on tight lockdown.
But one thing I did find out, I mean, people do consider this guy, this Buddha the Third guy, assuming he's a real person,
yeah,
a fake. That I found forums on different Buddhist, websites saying that he's a fake. He got this letter from some high up.
He forged the letter?
That he has all these fake counterfeit, like these certifications they're talking about. I mean, maybe came from like some backhanded dealings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like we could do a thousand. I mean, this should be the next fucking season of Serial. That's what this could be. I feel like this shit goes deep.
Send it in.
It's
send
like
it
you're just digging and you go down and there's a whole fucking ant colony under this shit that goes back to who knows what. I mean, the amount of money that they need to keep this place running and fucking, you know, God knows what else they're doing out of this fucking joint.
I don't know.
But I mean, just I'm the
sure
hugeness of this
back
place.
Doors.
Like, don't you think they got, I mean, they, I'm, millions of dollars got to be pumping in
oh,
and out
yeah.
of there.
I think so.
God damn. So go through. I wouldn't recommend giving them any money because I don't know what the fuck.
Don't give them any money. Are you kidding me? Don't buy anything at their bookshop.
I was very afraid going here knowing that there was like maybe some cult aspect because I feel like I'm very susceptible.
I know. Kate was concerned that she was going to get inducted into the cult.
My brain is like jello.
That's not true.
So
I'm very suspicious by nature. I'm like, no, don't talk to me.
They're gonna, if they hear this, I apologize. Please don't come and get me.
Yeah. Well, you know, if they hear this, they should do a better job. They should get someone to actually do those paintings.
I don't even know where to begin to right the wrongs of this place.
I know.
Like, how many places like this are there now? Like, of like truly bizarre, like, and not trying to be bizarre.
That's the thing. It's like they're not trying to be bizarre.
They're trying to be totally legit, but that makes it all the more bizarre. So I don't know. In that sense,
I'm not saying they should change.
I give it 9.5 out of 10 stars.
Oh man, that place is crazy. I think I started to get a little bit cagey towards the end. I was like, I gotta get out of here, guys.
It was wild, man. I was getting ready for them to come and haul us out because we were taking pictures we shouldn't have been.
You know.
We were talking crazy.
Katie's got to send this. We should try to post a couple of the plaques on the blog.
Okay, we'll have pictures and supplementary material in the link area. Soon, what's up with the startup art fair thing?
So I got an email from a fantastic artist named Susan O'Malley. Says Susan sent an email out to a group of, you know, her list or whatever, announcing this new art fair called Startup Fair, and the art in start is capital letters, so it's startup.
Unfortunate name.
Unfortunate.
I think that really is what I feel like people are turning against the name already.
Well, the name to me, it's like, immediately I'm like, oh, what the fuck is that? Startup fair.
Like,
come on. Can't we even... But it's ultimately an alternative to the usual art fair where galleries are bringing their represented artists to sell work. This startup art fair is for unrepresented artists, specifically to have their own booth where they can sell, or their own actual hotel room. It'll be at Hotel Del Sol, to have their
the
own...
The same time as Art Market.
Same time as Art Market, May 1st through 3rd, 2015. So these unrepresented artists can have their own booth, sell their own work, get 100% of the proceeds, which is fantastic for them, get exposure. The team who's running this market will be doing sort of all of the work behind it. It's started by Steve Zavatero of the former Marks and Zavatero Gallery downtown, and also Ray Beldner, who is an artist and curator. It's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting concept. I, you know, kind of squirmed up my nose at it.
You squirmed right your nose right
I
up. You squirmed your whole body up your nose.
My whole body went straight up my nose. And I just think part of that is I have some issue with like art fairs in general, and just sort of feel like I'm excited to see, and this is definitely a different take on the art fair, which is exciting or good, but I guess I want to see like a completely different model.
It's
that
hard
might be
thing
more
to parse.
Exciting.
Like what would be another model?
I mean I don't know, but that's because I'm not thinking about, I guess I'm not necessarily thinking about like the money making aspect of this world. Uh-huh. Or of the art world, and so it takes someone who's sort of working in that part of the art world to think about it. I think there is an application fee of $45, and I know that if you get in, there's accepting. There's a whole panel of people who are reviewing the applications and accepting.
Janet Bishop,
Paul Mullins, Heather Marks is on the panel. So they'll choose 50 artists. Total, or I think there's 50 hotel rooms.
50
basically.
Or so, yeah.
And Kate was wondering, we don't know if like one room could have like 10 artists.
Well, I'm thinking not, because I think you apply as an individual.
Yeah.
Seems crazy though.
So, and I feel like I saw how much the rooms were going for, but I want to say they're like $4,000 for the 3 days, which if you can sell your work, then that could.
4,000?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot. I mean, because the 4,000, the 4,000 covers like it has to cover the hotel, like the renting of the hotel, all of the VIP receptions, the press, all the PR stuff. It's like it's covering all of the costs. So it's sort of like the artists are paying for that, but hopefully in turn they actually get that money back and then some.
Hot damn, man.
So it just, I mean, to me, it's just like a little bit ticky tacky. I don't know.
Ticky tacky.
Ticky tickety tack tack.
It's like little boxes on the hillside.
But I don't want to be too negative. I think, you know, Steve Zavatero and Ray Beldner are fantastic. And I want to give the benefit of the doubt. I'm super curious to see what happens. I will probably likely try to go, hopefully,
yeah, let's
for
go.
Free.
Let's interview people there.
Let's interview people there. Maybe we should get a booth. CPT booth.
Fuck
for
no,
free.
Man. Okay, for free. Yeah.
Like, can we just hang out in your courtyard?
Maysoon.
Yeah.
We recently were interviewed.
We were.
And we were asked about the Bay Area art scene. You said that it is provincial.
Yes.
What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
I think what I mean by provincial is that it sort of stays within the Bay. It's like Bay Area artists, they're showing here. They don't really, it's hard, I think, for artists to move beyond the Bay Area, which is why I think a lot of artists end up moving. I think that's what I meant by
okay.
it.
Okay. Like I thought you were talking about the work itself being like
no.
insulated in that like the Bay Area has a specific like type of work that's made here that I don't know.
I mean, I do think people would argue that there's a specific Bay Area kind of style.
Well, but I feel like that is one type of work. There's so much different work like shown here and made here.
But when you go to New York, you don't think there's like a New York look?
Well, I kind of think the same thing about New York, that there's so like every kind
right.
of there's so many artists that every kind of work that can be made is made in New York.
But I guess I think that each sort of each region has like a specific style. But what I meant by provincial was more the scene, was that it's hard for Bay Area. I think Bay Area artists, it's hard for them to get out of the Bay Area. Like it's hard for other cities or other scenes to pull from here for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. And
I don't think too many people would argue with that.
Yeah. And I also think that there's not a lot of, you know, there's just not like there's not a lot of international artists coming through here. There's not a lot of artists from outside the Bay coming through here. I mean, there is, I think that's building as the area changes, but I think that's always been a big complaint. It's hard for artists to kind of like grow their art career here. Like, once they get to a certain level, they've had a few gallery shows. Sort of like,
then
where do I go now? You know, like, a lot of artists end up moving because they don't have enough, like, opportunity.
I think that's it.
But in places like L.A. and New York, there's like, I think
the sky's the limit.
Maybe. I mean, but there's also more like international people going through, and it seems like there's more exposure, and I don't necessarily think it's bad. I just think it's
part of
it's part of the bay, and I think it's actually, I think it can be a nice part of the bay too.
Well, I mean, I think that's just like every city in America that's not New York and LA. And even LA, like LA's really not as on the map as New York is.
No, definitely not.
Okay, well, that's fine. I don't know. I went to art. Okay, just going back. I went to art school in Ohio. We had every fucking thing. We had people making fucking mandalas out of wax because they're really into yoga and they're white. We had fucking people doing shit that was so conceptual that there was nothing there at all. So I don't know, man. I feel like we're in a very globalized world right now where whether you're in San Francisco or Iceland or wherever you're at, you're getting influenced by the same people because we've got all, we're all watching Art 21. We all can access every publication online.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So yeah. If you artists out there are planning on making a movie or a video.
Oh, here we go.
A video or a movie of a current living international leader being assassinated. Maybe don't do it yet.
Do it. I don't give a fuck. I think that they fuck. Okay, this, we're going to talk about this for exactly 1 minute because this has nothing to do with the Bay Area. Okay, first off, do whatever the fuck you want. Freedom of speech, American Eagle soars. Number two, Sony, you suck a dick. You can't fucking take orders from a dictator in a fucking fascist country out there who gives a shit. Number four, you're only trying to, oh, three, you're only trying to cover your ass because you sent a million fucking racist ass emails that you don't want the world to know about. And lastly, Seth Rogen sucks. I don't give a shit about this movie. It was probably garbage. I'm wondering if this was all publicity stunt by the studio to drum up some fucking, you know,
sales
of this movie that was going to do shit because it looks like garbage.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Good one, Kate. Still don't do it.
Anyhow. Congratulations! You listened to another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast. Be sure to call in or send your messages over the bird-themed social network.
Perfect.
At Pine Tree Podcast or call in 419-351-6606. Do it up.
Happy holidays.